This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Lucy May. Later in the program, we'll remember artist and musician Jay Bolitan. But first, the sale of recreational marijuana in Ohio. More than 100 Ohio marijuana dispensaries with provisional licenses are just waiting for the official go-ahead so they can begin selling their products. We'll also let you know if you can buy recreational marijuana in Ohio, even if you live in another state. Joining me to answer these questions are King City Gardens Director of Marketing and Business Development, Jessica Thames. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Also Director of the Center on Addiction Law and Policy and Assistant Professor of Law at NKU's Chase College of Law, Alex Kreit.
Great to be here.
Thanks, Alex. And Cincinnati Verilife General Manager, Melissa Mers. Hi, Melissa.
Hello.
Melissa joining us on Zoom. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Well, thank you all for being here. This is a subject that I know many, many people are interested in. And I think, Alex, I'm going to start with you. As we start out legally here, what all has to be done before the permission can be given? The law went into effect recently. It was passed as issue 2 in November of 2023. What happens now between now and the time these dispensaries can open?
Yeah, so, I mean, as kind of a little bit of background as to why it's, you know, take some time to get everything together is the law passes and then you have to get all the regulatory apparatus in place and have the licensing applications and all of the reviews, et cetera. And my understanding at this point is just they're, you know, the places that are waiting to go are waiting on their final inspection and review. And I think once that happens, which it seems like there's a reticence to give any indication as to exactly when that will be from the state, but I think that it could be at any time at this point. I think it's just down to that final review for the places that are in the queue in the licensing scheme.
Well, how about for you, Melissa? What are you all waiting for?
Same, pretty much. We're just waiting for the final. We received our provisionals for all three of our retail locations. We're just waiting for that next step of a virtual or an in-person licensing permission. That's where we're at in retail.
Jessica?
Yeah, absolutely. The cultivators, we're in a similar position, right? 210 provisional licenses had been administered. So, of course, that takes some time to go through all of the paperwork, of course, making sure that we have all of our ducks in a row when it comes to SOPs and timelines, waiting on that inspection to come through and give us the final go-ahead.
Standard operating procedures, SOP,
yes,
that's what
SOP,
you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. You talk about provisional licenses. Alex, maybe you can talk about that. What is a provisional license? Melissa?
I'll defer to those on the ground who are actually going through that process.
Melissa, I'm putting you together. Jessica and Melissa become Melissa. Not good. Melissa, do you want to answer that?
Yeah, so provisional licensing is where we've met all the qualifications that the state deemed important on our application. And they've looked at all of our standard operating procedures, our employment, our staffing and badging levels. And we're just awaiting the next inspections so that we can get our final, which will allow us to operate.
So talk about some of those standard operating procedures. What kinds of things did you have to do to get ready?
Well, we live and work in a very compliant state. Mm-hmm. So for the last 5 years, I've been operating that location. We are always updating our standard operating procedures. But some of the things that we put in additional in play is like curbside opportunity that was never available previously with the med, but with adult use. It lets us look at our business and open up some operating procedures. But that's one of the ones that we looked at in detail.
Jessica, anything in particular you all have to do?
Absolutely. So from the cultivation side, making sure everything before it goes to sale, the dispensaries is compliant, making sure everything is accurate so that when it does hit the dispensary, we know that these the products are, 100% what we said they were going onto the market.
For example, what would you say they are?
So for example, we would, look at the percentage of THC, for example, in a product to make sure that what we said at the, in the system that the state provides, it's called Metric, that percentage is accurately displayed on all of our products before they hit the shelves. So people know what they're buying.
So they're prepared for what they get. And is any of this, Melissa, maybe you can answer this, how different is it from to sell recreational marijuana versus medical marijuana?
From an operating perspective, you definitely have to have 2 points of your business to close out every day. You also need to keep your medical products secured in a different part of your vault than your adult use products. And it's just a general check-in procedure to King City Gardens Point. Their process has to be very detailed, and we have to ensure everything that comes in is documented correctly so we can sell AU patients the proper product and medical patients the proper product.
And you
so
have
it's a lot of into detail.
Do you have to set up the store differently? Or I read somewhere that they have to, like, you sell one product in one part of the store and the other product in another. Is that correct?
That is correct. We did divide out the store. We assigned medical registers and adult use registers. So the store will be separated when we go adult use.
And why is the reason? Just because you have to fill out different paperwork for that?
Well, it would behoove medical patients in the state of Ohio to stay medical patients because they get a different point of access. They're going to get lower tax rates, but the adult use patients can order online, and they're going to have some different products that they'll be able to purchase. So for ease of service, it behooves us to separate the store and provide the quality care that we are known for.
What are some of the different products? Are we talking like what you can smoke versus gummies? I'm not sure.
Right. Yes. So there are some different product levels, like topicals and tinctures will probably stay on the medical side. That's a lot of opportunities. High dose edibles probably will stay on the medical side. Like the final regs, I haven't seen them to speak to them in detail, but I know that on the adult use side, predominantly we see like loose flower edibles in the 110 to 220 range. Those mostly will stick with the adult use side. Smoking is not permitted in the state of Ohio with our terminology. It's vaporizing. So I'm interested to see how that will play out as well.
So you can't smoke marijuana in the state of Ohio? Is that what you're telling me? Is that the
law? Yes, you have to vaporize your product as a medical patient.
Alex, did you want to, are there details to that that we should know?
That's accurate for the medical patients, right? And I think that's, you know, some states have that rule about not smoking for medical patients because, you know, it's inconsistent, I guess, with the goal of overall health to allow for smoking. Some argue, certainly there are many states with medical marijuana that do allow for smoking for medical patients. But just in general, it's not uncommon in terms of the states that have legalized recreational and have pre-existing medical marijuana regimes to have a separation there, because there's a different, you know, there are a number of sort of different needs, right? There's the differences, certainly on the tax level, right? You don't want to really tax a medicine. If it's a medicine, somebody has a medical need, it's punitive to heavily tax that product. Whereas if it's used for recreation, of course, part of the goal is to raise taxes on that side of the market.
So it's just a matter of keeping it all separate. And exactly. Recreational marijuana can be smoked, or does that also have to be vaporized?
That is not, to my understanding, there's not going to be any, it will be allowed to be smoked. But.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. As of right now, we don't have clarity on the language that can be used around that, but I can imagine in a recreational market that there wouldn't be restrictions on using that terminology.
All right. There's a lot going on here with all of this, and I think people have a lot of questions. So if you do have a question, I want to remind you, you can call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. One of the reasons I'm giving you that number quickly now is we have these folks here just until about 12:30. So if you have a question and you want to get that in early, they won't be here for the entire hour of the program. Alex, let's talk a little bit more about the legalities of all of this. So the state of Ohio has to have this working by September 7th, where everybody can be open. So they thought it was going to be June, then there was talk about July, but the drop-dead deadline on this is September 7th. For people that don't live in Ohio but come to Ohio and perhaps want to purchase recreational marijuana, what does the law say?
Well, just in terms of going back to where they're coming from, I mean, because that's really
or even are they allowed to buy? First of all, I guess, do you have to be an Ohio resident to buy in Ohio?
Yeah, states that have legalized don't have residence restrictions on purchasing. But to bring, you know, if you were to purchase it and then go back to you know, where you're from, if you live across the river in Kentucky, for example, and you were to come and bring it back to Kentucky, you certainly run the risk of being, you know, arrested and prosecuted in Kentucky. The fact that you've purchased it legally in Ohio is going to be no defense if you were to possess it in a state where it is not legal.
Okay, so you can buy it here, but if you're going to buy it here, you have to use it in Ohio.
To, you know, be legally protected in Ohio. Right, yes, exactly.
Are you wink, wink, nudge, nudging here, saying you anticipate people will likely take that chance?
Yeah, I mean, based on other states, right, I think it's not uncommon in states that have legalized if you, you know, live on the border and you're in a state that has not legalized. And, you know, there's certainly a number of examples of places where people cross the border, make a purchase and bring it back and use in their home. And, you know, the reality of it is you know, if you were to choose to do that, you run the risk of potentially getting arrested. If you bring it back and, you know, here back into Kentucky, you could get pulled over, you could get arrested. But on the other hand, I mean, the likelihood is very low. So I think, you know, a lot of people make that calculation and say, you know, I'll go across the river, you know, I'll make a purchase, I'll bring it back home. And I'm, you know, kind of willing to run that risk of getting arrested. But people should know, I mean, it is a risk. There's no legal protection whatsoever in Kentucky if you were to have purchased it legally in Ohio.
We are talking about the legalization of recreational marijuana in Ohio, and we have lots of questions to answer yet, but we're going to take a short break. We'd like to hear from you, too. Again, you can call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Thank you so much for listening today. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Lucy May. Later in the program, we'll remember artist and musician Jay Bolotin. But first, we continue our discussion about marijuana dispensaries in Ohio. Joining me are King City Gardens Director of Marketing and Business Development, Jessica Thames, Director of the Center on Addiction Law and Policy and Assistant Professor of Law at NKU's Chase College of Law, Alex Kreit, and Cincinnati Verilife General Manager Melissa Merce is joining us on Zoom today. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Alex, I want to get into a little bit more of our discussion about the laws. And we do have a question from a person online. We're going to go first to Robin. Hi, Robin. What's your question?
Well, I wonder if the last speaker can clarify in a little more detail the potential laws being violated if someone from Kentucky purchases recreational marijuana in Ohio and brings it back to Kentucky. With respect to other more than one issue involved. In other words, the fact that it's not legal to use it in Kentucky and also the potential federal law of bringing it across state lines.
Yeah, so, you know, on the federal side, I think it's sometimes a misconception, and understandably so, that the federal law really hinges on whether you bring it across state lines. Frankly, federal law applies in Ohio every bit as much as it does anywhere else in the country. So possessing marijuana is actually still technically a federal crime, but the federal government has not been enforcing federal law against state legal marijuana activities. And the federal government very, very, very rarely prosecutes possession, even in states where it's against the law. Like, unless you're possessing marijuana on a federal park or federal property, that's the only kind of situation where it would end up in federal court. On the state side, the crime would be possession. So Kentucky criminalizes a simple possession of marijuana. And so if you were to bring marijuana into Kentucky that was purchased in Ohio, you'd be committing the state crime of possession of marijuana in Kentucky. And I should add, that's true whether you're, you know, whether you live in Kentucky, whether you live in Ohio, because sometimes, I mean, Google Maps will sometimes take me through Kentucky if I'm driving from one place in Cincinnati to a different place in Ohio. Even if you're just in Kentucky for 5 minutes, because Google Maps took you through there, if you're physically in Kentucky, it is, you know, against the law in Kentucky to possess marijuana.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that. You can sort of dip into Ohio periodically. Robin, did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Again, our number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment. What's a felony? 8 ounces, is that right?
Yes, in Kentucky, that is the number. Below that would be a misdemeanor for possession I mean, people should be aware, a misdemeanor, the criminal penalties are low, you know, relatively lower for a misdemeanor, but having a misdemeanor criminal offense, you know, is itself, it's not something people, I think, should take lightly, especially because it can come with other collateral consequences in terms of licensing. You know, if you're a professional that has a license, if you have a misdemeanor conviction, that can become a problem for that. So, you know, people, you know, should be mindful of that potential risk if they were to consider, you know, coming from Kentucky into Ohio, buying marijuana, bring it back to their home. Again, it's not something that's at all uncommon in terms of things that we've seen in other states that have legalized and have neighboring states that still have it illegal. But people should be aware of that, the risk of that consequence.
What about the whole idea of driving under the influence? Are there still, even with legal possession in Ohio, what are the laws for that?
Yeah, so that varies state by state in terms of what the rules are, what the state defines as driving under the influence. And it's been kind of a difficult problem nationwide, whether you have legalization or not, because it's really about the science. Because marijuana, the science of marijuana isn't really the same in terms of how our bodies metabolize it as it is for alcohol. So we don't have a scientific number that's a sort of scientifically valid number like you do for alcohol. We can say 0.08. You know, we've studied it. We know that that shows impairment. We just don't have that. The science doesn't have that for marijuana. So different states take different approaches. Ohio does have a numbers-based, a numerical threshold in terms of what's defined as driving under the influence as far as the metabolites in your body. Kentucky has an impairment-based law. I believe there was a proposal in the last legislative session in Kentucky to have a numerical threshold. I don't believe that you know, went anywhere. We'll see if it changes in the future. But that is a problem that's been struggled with. And again, it's a little bit related to legalization, but whether it's legal or not, you know, in states that still have it illegal, marijuana is and has been for decades the most commonly used illegal drug. And so, you know, driving under the influence is, I think, you know, a policy problem and something to be considered, whether it's illegal or legal. And it's, you know, it's a dangerous thing to do, right? I mean, if you're under the influence, you certainly should not drive. And states have a problem because of that science in terms of trying to decide how the law should define that.
Melissa, do you have any signage in your store or anything like that to warn people of that?
No, we're not required to, but education, patients ask us all the time. So we try to give them the verbiage that we are allowed to discuss and then point them to the websites that the state offers for education purposes.
And Jessica, is there anything related to how strong the marijuana is that you are cultivating that could make a difference with that?
You know, again, to mirror Melissa, we tend to direct people to the Ohio State website for educational, but in terms of cultivation, we don't really have, you know, very specific language around that in terms of education.
So what about Kentucky? It's not going to be illegal in Kentucky for a long time. Alex, are you familiar with the laws there?
Yeah, so, well, that's good. The medical marijuana is in the process of being implemented in Kentucky. And it's going there right now in the licensing period. The licensing application process opened up for medical marijuana at the beginning of the month in Kentucky. I believe it goes through August 31st. And then January 1st is when the law will take effect for patients to get certified. But Kentucky's medical marijuana law is a relatively restrictive medical marijuana law. And it certainly is not going to, you know, does not allow for recreational marijuana. There's a list of conditions that are qualifying conditions. And so it will be legal soon in Kentucky for medical purposes, but not for recreational.
So here's a crazy question. If you are prescribed, for lack of a better word, medical marijuana, you live in Kentucky, can you buy it in Ohio and cross state lines with it then?
No, not under Kentucky law.
So you'd have to buy it in Kentucky and use it in Kentucky.
Correct. So the Kentucky is, you know, going to require purchasing in Kentucky. And although the law has been passed in Kentucky, it's really not going to be until January 1st, 2025, that patients are going to be able to get state certified there. So even though that law has passed and, you know, we have that anticipation, patients even, you know, even if in theory a store were, you know, open, it's not going to be until January 1st.
After January 1st, is it legal then for them to cross state lines with it?
They're going to have to get it in Kentucky.
So there's some, I how does that work with labeling? I mean, right. Jessica, do you label it, you know, made in Ohio? I mean, how does that work?
Exactly. So we do, there's specific language that goes on every label, and it's going to be specific by state. So we're actually in the process of looking into getting, you know, opening facilities in Kentucky, because we are going to have specific language around what Kentucky rolls out for medical.
And I'd add that, I mean, that's really sort of a function of federal law, right? It's, we're in this very strange place where since 2013, the federal government has taken a hands-off approach to state marijuana laws. That was the Department of Justice issued a memo then. It's, even though that's technically been, that memo was rescinded, but it's really been followed in spirit even since it was rescinded. The federal government isn't coming in and prosecuting people. But on the books, marijuana is still illegal federally. And so you're not, you know, that in and of itself is something that prevents these interstate marijuana markets from developing. And also, you have state level regulation. Most of the things that we're used to, if it's distributed nationwide, there's a national standard for what this labeling is going to be, for what the testing is going to be. Because it's illegal federally, we don't have anything like that for marijuana.
Okay, so I have another question, and this is, so Colorado, of course, is legal recreationally and medicinally in Colorado, but you can't bring that to Ohio because, A, even if they were bordering states, or B, because you'd get on an airplane and drive in a car and cross through a whole bunch of states that don't allow it.
Well, if it's bordering, you could, if for legalization for recreational purposes, states have not adopted any requirements of where it's purchased typically, so generally, you know, if you were just an individual user and you purchased in one state where it's legal and you brought the marijuana you purchased over into another state where it's legal, that other state wouldn't be a crime to possess it. But it's really on the marketing and the production, the manufacture, the distribution side where you really can't do that because you have state by state regulatory regimes. And the regulatory regime, the packaging, the testing, the labeling, all that kind of stuff for state A is not going to be the same as state B. And so you're not really able to have that interstate distribution market like you do for any other product.
Melissa, what? How does that work for you? Do you have specific, you know, the labeling, I guess, comes from the manufacturer, but what all do you do in terms of trying to keep that all straight?
Well, we only purchase from all of our vendors in Ohio. So each vendor has the criteria that's given to them from the state that at check-in process, the people who check the product in verify that it meets the criteria and the labeling is absolutely correct. They're looking for certain things on that THC, the number of the grower. So, you know, there is very slim opportunity to receive a product outside of the state of Ohio.
All right. We're out of time. I knew it would go fast. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking about dispensing recreational marijuana in Ohio. My guests were King City Gardens Director of Marketing and Business Development, Jessica Thames, Director of the Center on Adishkin Law and Policy, and Assistant Professor of Law at NKU's Chase College of Law, Alex Kreit, and Cincinnati Verilife General Manager, Melissa Merce.